Welcome to the Fundamental Health Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Paul Saladino. This podcast is the result of my relentless search to understand and correct the roots of chronic disease and illness. In this podcast, I will share with you everything I have learned about how to live the most healthy and radical life possible. Thanks for joining me on this journey. What is up, you guys? I have had such an exciting week. So many cool things are happening. I was just in Pensacola hanging out with my publisher. We were looking at graphics on pages and getting everything set up. The book is coming in hot. It is so close, and I am so excited to share it with you all. You can go to thecarnivorecodebook.com to pre-order, and you can go to my website, which is carnivoremd.com, to sign up for my newsletter. You can become an insider and get the inside scoop on happenings with me. The podcast is doing so good, you guys. Last week's was so much fun with Brian Sanders. Thank you to Brian for all the hard work that he did, and we were able to make an awesome episode debunking Wilkes and Kresser. It was awesome. Check it out on this podcast or on YouTube or on Brian's podcast as well. It was amazing. And I would love it and appreciate it so much if you guys would leave me a review on iTunes or wherever else you listen to this podcast, because it is gaining steam. It is getting tens of thousands of downloads every week, and we are sharing this message widely. So help me do this with more people. Thank you all for being such engaged, incredible people that are on this journey with me. I appreciate you all so, so much. This week, I have the amazing Elise Parker and Tim Schieff on the podcast. These are two incredible individuals, you guys. Elise Parker was a really well-known vegan who ended up having health issues, as you will hear about, and then switching to a carnivore diet and doing much, much better, feeling amazing. So Elise has 700,000 followers on YouTube and over 200,000 followers on Instagram. She probably has over 1 million followers total. She was a really, really well-known vegan advocate and just wasn't doing well, had the courage to go back to meat, talked about it with her community, got a lot of flack, but is now thriving in Southern California. I am blessed to call her my neighbor, and she is crushing it, you guys. She has some amazing stuff, which you should check out at EliseParker.com. Tim Schieff is a world champion free runner. This guy is a wizard. He doesn't even pay attention to the laws of gravity. You should definitely check out videos of him doing free running on YouTube, etc. Maybe I'll link to one in the show notes. But Tim was also a really well-known vegan, and in fact, because he was so prolific with his free running and parkour, which is flipping over walls and jumping and running over things in urban environments, amazing feats of balance and gymnastic skill. And he also won, I believe, American Ninja Warrior in the UK, or at least got into the finals. An incredible individual doing so well with his free running for a little while as a vegan, and then his health really started to suffer. If you look at his Instagram, you will see that he lost a lot of weight, and by the time he stopped being a vegan, was incredibly emaciated. There's a famous video of him on YouTube talking about how he ate salmon and then had a wet dream for the first time in years, had the return of physical vigor and vitality and improvements in his mood. So I had both Elise and Tim on the podcast sharing their stories. I think this is all very timely. Elise actually went on Good Morning America last week and talked about her transition from being a vegan to being carnivore or carnivore-ish. They're both pretty much eating carnivore-ish most of the time right now. And Elise did a video on YouTube that is basically going viral about her transition to a carnivore diet as well. So you can check that out on her channel, which you will find if you Google Elise Parker. So really timely, especially because Tim was in the Game Changers and he asked them to take him out because he was no longer doing well on a vegan diet. So another shot across the bow to James Wilkes with this podcast I am sending. Anyway, you guys are going to love this one. I just got back from White Oak Chela at White Oak Pastures. You guys, so amazing. I hope I saw some of you there. We are going to do it again in the spring. www.whiteoakpastures.com. It was so cool to hang out with Will Harris, the owner. I'm going to put some clips on my Instagram of him. We talked about B12, how he doesn't give it to cows. We talked about rotational grazing. They have 130-acre paddocks of land that they move the cows and other animals from every day or every few days. They let the animals graze on the land and impact it and pee and poop there and fertilize the soil. Then they move the animals off that land and the grass grows back. And this is some of the greenest grass I have ever seen in my life, and some of the most healthy looking animals I've ever seen. Such a cool experience. They are doing it right. They care about the land in such a deep way. So You can use the code CarnivoreMD.com to get 10% off your first order with White Oak Pastures, or you can use the code Carnivore15 if you go to info.whiteoakpastures.com/CarnivoreMD to see what is on special this month for my people who listen to this podcast. While I was there, we recorded a podcast. It was live Q&A. I will post that one soon. I got to meet the whole family. I got to meet the dogs and the cats and have big bonfires with all the radical people that showed up. I can't wait for White Oak Pastures, White Oak Cella next year. And I am so proud to support them and feature them. We are voting with our dollars. This is the future of basically our health, the health of the planet, and the health of ecosystems. So I could not be more excited to share with you guys the information about White Oak Pastures. Check out their stuff and become superhuman by eating basically the best meat and organs and fat on the planet. I had a lot of Iberian pig this weekend. So good. And the Iberian fat, amazing. Check out White Oak Pastures, guys. They are good people. If you get a chance, just go visit them. They will welcome you with open arms. They are amazing. Ancestral Supplements, these are also my people, you guys. www.ancestralsupplements.com. They are doing such cool things by encapsulating grass-fed, grass-finished organs from New Zealand-raised cattle into gelatin capsules to make it easier for all of us to travel. When I'm traveling to Georgia or Pensacola to meet my publisher, it's not always easy to carry liver on the plane. TSA looks at me funny, and I will bring ancestral supplements. I will also use their supplements to add to the organs that I can't get. I can't always get brain. I can't always get pancreas. I can't always get thymus. They've recently come out with an eye supplement, which is really cool. And I talked about their tallow supplement last week, which I think is an amazing adjunct to all of their others because it allows us to absorb the fat-soluble vitamins in a much better fashion. And fat has always been prized by indigenous hunter-gatherers. If you listen to my talk at Ancestral Health Symposium this year, I talked about a greeting used by Andean Indians called Wiracocha, I believe is how they pronounce it, which means a sea of fat. It's a blessing, and it's a greeting for others in the indigenous tribe, and it means, hey, may you be blessed by a sea of fat, and may you all be blessed by a sea of fat and abundance in this holiday season. Check out Ancestral Supplements to augment your amazing nutrition, which is hopefully inspired by this and other episodes of the podcast. I am loving the organ complex. I just saw my sister today. She has the cutest daughter. I got to play with my 2-year-old niece, and my sister is using the liver and the organ complex for her daughter because my 2-year-old niece isn't going to eat liver just yet. We're trying, or I'm encouraging my sister to do it, but it's easy for her just to sprinkle it on the food or mix it into something. My niece won't taste it, and then she's getting really good freeze-dried nutrition from these grass-fed organs. So check out ancestralsupplements.com. These are also really good people, and I love them all. So you can use the code SaladinoMD at the Shopify site for 10% off. They are putting back in what the modern world has left out. They are our people. So White Oak is my people, and Ancestral Supplements are my people. These are such good people, you guys. I'm so happy to support them. Last but not least, I have appreciated what Native Deodorant has done in the space. We all need to be working and interacting with people and not smelling too much like we just walked off a farm. So Native Deodorant is making natural deodorants with no parabens, no phthalates, no xenoestrogens, none of these things that can harm our normal hormonal balance. They make them in some great scents. They have a lavender scent, they have a vanilla scent, and they work. They actually will prevent us from smelling like we're working on a farm all day so we can get in the office, but still not be exposed to pesticides and other nasties. They are at native.com. They have over 5,000 4- and 5-star reviews on Amazon. They are well-loved. They have a free returns policy. Check them out for natural deodorant. If you are you not using natural deodorant, what are you doing with your life? Like, why are you using the other junk stuff? Anyway, so check out native.com. You can use the code Saladino at nativedeodorant.com. I think I said it wrong earlier. It's not native.com. It's nativedeodorant.com to get 10% off your first order. I use their stuff. I have used it. I found it to be very effective without filling my armpits with the nasties. They also don't have an aluminum in there or anything else. So check them out, nativedeodorant.com. On to the podcast, my friends. I love and appreciate you all so much. I love and appreciate Tim and Elise so much and their courage to share the message and the truth of their experiences. So I will see you guys after the podcast for what is going on with me.
All right. I'm here with Elise and Tim. We've got some amazing stories for you guys this week. We're just going to jump in. Thanks for being here, you guys.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah. So Elise and I met at PaleoFX, right?
Mm-hmm.
Earlier this year. And I think that Brian Sanders, who we were just hanging out with, said, yeah, you got to meet Elise. She's this really cute, kind of short girl. And she was taking a photo with Sean Baker, and he's like twice her size. So it's this amazing image of like this huge Sean Baker and this little tiny Elise. But for people that don't know you, I mean, tell us a little bit about, just tell us your story. Like, let's just jump in. Like, where does it start for you, Elise? Where would you start with your story?
Cool. I'll give the short version. So I was vegan for 4.5 years, and I thought that it was the superhuman diet. It really worked well for me for a period of time. It felt fun. I was integrated into the vegan community. It was like the colorful diet, like so much goodness about it. And yeah, in a matter of years, I just started to notice certain parts of my health decline. The biggest part for me was my brain health. I just kind of lost my ability to communicate clearly and felt very brain foggy, felt fatigue. I also definitely struggled with digestion throughout kind of the entire time that I was eating a vegan diet. And it just got to a point where with the career that I have, doing what I do online, social media every single day, like I need my brain, and not only for my career, but also just for life, you know, to be able to think clearly and communicate with others and just interact with the world. I felt like I couldn't do that towards the end. And so I kind of reached this surrender point where I was willing to try anything. And I had a friend of mine who was vegan for 5 years and transitioned to a carnivore diet and just started experiencing an amazing transformation. And I was kind of watching from afar, like listening to the updates. And I was like, wow, this is so fascinating, but I don't understand. Like it goes against everything that I thought I knew to be so true. So it was intriguing, but I wasn't quite buying it for a period of time until I reached that point with myself where I was just like, I will try anything for 7 days. And I just set my mind to carnivore for seven days. And I had some smoked salmon one night. I woke up the next morning like the most mentally clear I had been in years. And from that point on, I was kind of like, maybe this doesn't need to be a 7 day trial. Like, I think I have my answer after that one, you know, like 12-hour period. And so since that point on, that was almost a year ago at this point, I've been eating mostly animal foods, just feeling so much better, more mentally clear, and various other aspects of health improving as well. So that's kind of my story.
It's pretty incredible. I think we're going to see that theme of like the magical salmon coming into the picture and creating, you know, some pretty massive changes in Tim's story as well. But so you started a vegan diet, what? It must have been 5 years ago now that you started.
Yeah, I think a little over 5 years ago.
What originally, like, how did you get drawn into it? You know, what was the messaging that brought you to a vegan diet? Because right now, we just have been filming kind of a rebuttal video with Brian Sanders to Game Changers. And it's a dangerous documentary in some ways because it's well done from a Hollywood perspective. It's not well done from a scientific perspective. And I think that there have been a number of these sort of things that have happened over the last 10 to 20 years that have really appealed to a lot of people emotionally and pulled them into a vegan lifestyle from the best intentions, right? So I'm just curious, like, what originally kind of pulled you into that space?
Yeah, good question. For me, it wasn't documentaries at first. It was YouTube, tuning into other YouTubers who just shared their lifestyle. And for me, it was actually raw food, not just veganism, but like a raw vegan diet, just fruits and vegetables that appealed to me because I was watching some individuals online just
fully
like...
Raw or Yovana?
Fully raw. Fully raw. Yeah, yeah. Just all the like the abundance and the vibrance and like, yeah, just all the fruits and veggies. And I just thought that was so appealing. I looked at the food, I looked at the people, and I was like, this matches. Like, this person is glowing, and I want that for myself. And so that's what attracted me at first. And I was just kind of on and off raw or striving to eat raw for almost the full 4.5 years. Yeah.
I think it's an intriguing concept. You know, I had a vegan phase too. And I forget exactly what pulled me into it. I think it was some kind of the same thing. Like there's just a very appealing idea around eating raw plants and raw fruits and vegetables.
It's like being one with the earth.
Or something like that. It's very easy, I think, for plant-based advocates to sell that as like, this is the ideal diet. It seems clean based on our conditioning. And we know a lot of our conditioning is pretty wrong at this point, but it seems like it would be clean. And then not cooking plants is another layer. And it's like, oh, if you only eat raw fruits and vegetables from the earth, you will be as healthy as possible. That's what sucked me into it. I got sucked in the writings of David Wolf and these people talking about how cooking food is bad and it hurts you. And I mean, there's all this kind of rhetoric without a lot of science, but it's very intriguing.
Yeah.
And somehow it appeals to humans. Like, yeah. And like you said, the colors, and people can make these very beautiful plates.
Yeah. And I think also another thing for me is like, I am always so compelled by looking at like seeing what is working for other people. Like I've never like tapped deep into the science. Like I wouldn't be one to like look at these YouTube videos or maybe look at what David Wolf is sharing and like go deep into a research hole. Like I look at them and I'm like, if it looks like it's working for them, I'm just going to give it a try. And so that's kind of where I came from. And I gave it a try and then got really deeply sucked into the community in a positive way at first. And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. If I get out of this, then I'm shunned. And that was an interesting thing to look at.
It's a very sticky community. You know, it's a lot of people who are banding together around what at first appears to be a very appealing idea. You don't have to eat animals. You can get all the things you need from plants. It's colorful. It's going to save the earth. But it doesn't really hold up. As you know, many people who listen to this podcast will know, many of those concepts actually turn out to be false, but it's appealing from the outside. There was the channel you were looking at was Fully Raw. Mm-hmm. Is that person still vegan?
Yeah.
But another one you guys were talking about was Yovana.
Mm-hmm. And Yovana, she's a good friend of both me and him. Yeah.
And is she still vegan?
No.
She's not vegan anymore.
Nope.
Because what seems to happen is a similar story to what both of you guys have experienced, that people may have an improvement in the beginning, but a lot of people end up having health decline. Do you think that there are vegans... maybe this isn't a fair question, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you think there are vegans out there misrepresenting their health or kind of pretending to be healthy?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things, first thing I spoke up on. As an athlete, I was looking around and people were looking at me as the representation of a healthy, like an athletic potential is an expression of optimum, like human health, right? It's an expression of health. So I was looking around going, I don't feel that good. And people are looking at me like I'm this expression of health and I don't feel that good. So therefore, where is the healthy people in the community? And that was one of the triggers for me, was like, well, because I don't feel it here. And so I started to say publicly, I was like, should we speak about veganism? Like I see other YouTubers searching for their health and going to get gut checks by Goji Man and stuff. And then they're on the BBC representing, speaking about the health benefits of veganism. It's like, you don't have your health in check. How do you have, like, there's just no integrity in that. And so I stopped speaking about it publicly for the last few years as I was searching to find mine until it changed. Yeah.
You kind of had a little crisis of faith there yourself, but I think as humans, we have ego, right? And when we become, I mean, Elise, you became very popular on YouTube and Instagram, over a million followers between those. Mm-hmm. I want to hear the whole story, but we can fast forward to the part where you were kind of losing faith in this. Was it scary? I mean, I think it's got to be hard as a human to have a million followers between YouTube and Instagram and to think the majority of the people follow me because of an image. And I think this is eroding. I think this is false. Like, what is that like?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Similar to what Tim just shared, I definitely knew individuals who were not like from a bad place, from a pure place, like they're passionate about it, wanting it to work, but in a sense misrepresenting it because it just wasn't working for them, but they were still trying to share it in that light. And same thing for me, I kind of took a backseat or let food topics take a backseat on my channel for a period of time when I started to notice that it, like, I wasn't exactly sure what was going on. Not that I really knew that, like I had no idea that I was going to be transitioning my diet, but I knew that I wasn't sure exactly what was up with my health. And so I kind of transitioned away from focusing on that about a year and a half before my diet changed. And so I couldn't bring myself to talk about it that much. But that being said, still, like, since it was something that was such the main focus for a while, I was still perceived as this quote unquote vegan YouTuber, even though I maybe had one video about food like every 3 months, I was still perceived as that. And so that was terrifying to think about shifting and just considering, like, I don't know how many people are tuning in just for the food. And at that point, I was like, I'm just going to trust that they're here for more than that, that they're really here for the positivity and the mindset transformation and all of that. But it was definitely a terrifying leap. But I knew that there wasn't another option. Like, to show up and to share about something that didn't feel true literally wasn't an option, both for myself and for everyone on the other side. So it was just like there was no plan B. Like, I just had to speak about it. And I just trusted that in sharing what was my story that maybe someone else could relate. And like, even if I was able to help one person regain any aspect of their health, like, it would be worth it. And I just had to let go of the idea that I had to be this certain, yeah, to fit into this identity in order to keep doing what I was doing.
I think that, yeah, it's an interesting wrinkle for all of us in the health space, how much ego gets tied up in it. And I think about that even now being a carnivore doctor, you know, like, I try to stay open-minded and unbiased. And I think, what if carnivore doesn't work? You know, am I going to have to rebrand myself? And thankfully, I think that at this point, I'm pretty confident that what we're doing in the animal-based sphere is pretty darn helpful for people.
Yeah.
But it is a scary thing to think, this is everything I've worked for and this is my identity. And if this is wrong, it's going to redefine me in a scary way.
But I think we're always learning more information. Like, we're always going to be updating what we currently know. And I think that at the core of what you share, it's health, your passion for health. So I just had to sink into that as like, what is the core of what I've been sharing amongst, like, underneath the food and the positive affirmations and like all the lifestyle behaviors? And it's like treating ourselves properly and doing the best we can with the information that we have at hand. And that was like a big part of my story is like, look, I didn't know better. I didn't know that this was something that was going to help me until I did. And then I shared it. But yeah, it was a tricky one.
So what was your diet like before you went vegan?
Before I went vegan, I would group it into like standard American diet, mac and cheese, salads, both ends of the spectrum, striving to be healthy, but also like eating junk food, processed food. I was in college and yeah.
Well, I think it's an interesting thing because a lot of people, when they go vegan, do experience a benefit in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Did you feel some 100%. Benefit in the beginning?
Yeah, 100%. And it made sense. Going from the food that I was eating was packaged. It was processed. Even though I was striving to be healthy and parts of my diet were, like, there was a major contrast when I first went vegan. I went straight to whole foods. I didn't eat any vegan, quote unquote, junk food for like a year into being vegan. And so, of course, going to whole plant foods, cutting out processed foods, just that alone was very positive for me. And I felt amazing. Like, the first year at least I felt great, and then after that I was kind of on this search for like, how do I make my digestion better?
Started to have digestive issues after about a year.
Yeah, maybe even sooner than that. And I was just constantly like trying one thing after another, like juice cleansing, water fasting, let me try to just eat watermelon, let me try to just eat papaya. And like, yes, it improved my digestion because it was so simple and because I was eating less fiber, eating whatever. But it wasn't sustainable.
A watermelon diet is not sustainable.
No, and I learned that.
Despite what people say, you cannot live on 16 bananas a day.
Yeah.
And that there's some crazy stuff out there. So, because I think this is a really important point to elaborate on for people. I get asked a lot of questions. Why does a vegan diet work for some people? And I think this is the reason that when you eliminate processed junk food, anything is better than processed junk food. In fact, nothing is better than processed junk. You can just fast. Mm-hmm. You can stop eating or just drink water for some amount of time. And that's better for processed junk food. That's incredibly healing. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, there's these places in Mexico that do Gerson therapy. And a lot of listeners don't know that in Gerson, they use a lot of organ meats from animals as well as sort of juice cleanses. It's kind of like juices. And they also have traditionally used like liver. So yeah, but that's de-emphasized in the plant-based communities. They don't want to tell people that they're using animal organs in Gerson. But I think that what the helpful part of a vegan diet, and you can let me know what you think about this statement, is that it, for a lot of people, it's a calorie deficit. And that's why a lot of people lose weight. And I did a podcast with David Sinclair a few weeks ago. There are known mechanisms to caloric restriction that are beneficial. We turn on genes like sirtuins. Mm-hmm. We turn on genes that are quote unquote longevity genes when we do caloric restriction. So any diet that is calorically restricted can be beneficial to a human, even if it's made of Twinkies or purely celery in the short term. And so I think this is why people get benefits to vegan diets, is that they, number one, usually replace processed foods because they're making an intentional choice. And on other podcasts, I've said, I will give somebody a high five if they make any intentional diet choice. Now, I want them to be informed about the long-term nutritional consequences of a plant-based diet. But if you're choosing a plant-based diet over a standard American diet, props to you because you made an intentional decision. Now, mm-hmm. I have concerns about that long term, but people making intentional food decisions is what gets me excited. Now, the problem begins to arise long term when the nutrients aren't absorbed, or the lectins or the toxins in the plants, the sort of intrinsic toxins, damage the gut. But in the short term, it's almost like fasting. Mm-hmm. You know, Gerson therapy, raw vegan diets, they're almost like fasting because they're calorically restricted, which we know can benefit people. And they're eliminating processed food. And so I think people feel better in the short term until the nutritional deficiencies catch up, which they inevitably do.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely agree with parts of that as far as like the extent of which that diet is being followed. For myself, like in the beginning, I was borderline overeating raw food. So I wasn't in a caloric deficit for the entire time that I was vegan, I wouldn't say. I would say like ebb and flow. Like in the beginning, I was dealing with overeating. So I was eating a lot, but because of like, again, because of the contrast from processed food to, yes, maybe I was having more food than I needed in the beginning, but it was plant food, it was whole foods. And that contrast was positive. And then it got to a point where, yes, my body was not getting everything that it needed because it wasn't diverse enough and I didn't have the animal foods.
What do you think caused your gut issues? Any ideas?
I
could speculate as well.
Chickpeas, lentils, is it that stuff? What do you think?
I think so. FODMAP. Or lectins. I would say lectins. I think that some of the more damaging components in plant foods to the gut could be lectins.
There was a period of time when I could not digest lettuce. There were periods of time where I couldn't digest like lots of different plant foods.
Yeah. And I think that so many of the plant-based foods are very high in lectins and very high in things that can damage the gut.
I think the astringency of fruit as well.
Yeah.
I think that was a big, because it's a lot of it's acidic, or it sort of burns like pineapple and stuff like that, right? And it's like when you're eating nothing but that, maybe it is good in short bursts, like going to the gym is good in a small amount. But when all you're doing is that, it was just filing down the insides. And that's what long term, it felt like that. When you go to the bathroom, it just got really painful.
Yeah, there's clearly some inflammation there. Yeah. Did your dental health change at all on a vegan diet?
Mine didn't. I've never had a cavity.
Wow.
I can't speak to any of the tooth stuff.
So when I was doing a vegan diet, I did like multiple smoothies a day. I had these huge green smoothies. Yep. I would go to the grocery store and buy like maybe eight heads of kale every 2 to 3 days. I would eat multiple heads of kale per day. I shudder to think at how many isothiocyanates I was eating. I was just putting down these things into smoothies. And I went to the dentist at some point and they said, you have 7 cavities. And I thought, no, I'm on a vegan diet. This is the cleanest thing in the world. You have 7 cavities. And thankfully I just said, I'm going to wait for them to heal. And shortly thereafter, I think I transitioned back into animal foods and I never needed to have them filled. Wow. You know, I never needed to have, yeah. If you don't erode fully through the enamel on a tooth, it can regrow. The outside of a tooth is actually living tissue. But I developed massive amount of cavities on a vegan diet. And
dang,
yeah.
That is whack. Yeah. I definitely have a few friends who had major teeth issues, like the enamel. Tim, did you have anything?
Yeah, I had a bit of teeth issues. Nothing where I went to the dentist and had to have something done, but I definitely get sore gums. And yeah, when I did fasting, that was something that came up, was my gums were like needed healing, definitely.
So Tim, why don't you tell us a little bit about your story? You know, how did this start for you? Where did it come from? And yeah.
Gary Yourofsky, I watched his speech while tidying my bedroom one day, the greatest speech you'll ever see on YouTube. And he just spoke a lot of sense to me, and he spoke well, and he was very passionate, and he delivered science and ethics and everything. And it was like, wow. And so it was like, I was eating completely, pretty much unconsciously. I was an athlete, but I was young enough that I could get away with eating whatever and it would burn up. And I was kind of like you, I'd eat some salads and I'd eat mac and cheese and burgers and lasagna and Italian food and stuff, some snack bars. I saw this and I was like, wow, this is like, it just brought something to my awareness. I just got into Eckhart Tolle, A New Earth. And so was starting to get into spirituality and understanding my own mind and my brain's makeup and where my beliefs come from. And I was like, wow, why do I have a right to kill animals for my food choices if it's not necessity? And so it was that. I was like, cool, okay. So it was like zooming out on, I was living this life causing destruction without being aware, zooming out, oh, my choices cause this and this, so I better change them to meet my new beliefs. So I became vegan and started to promote it. It helped me in the first 6 months, year. I definitely felt better. Then slowly started to sense something wasn't quite right. So then started to search further. I knew the diet was fine, but maybe there's some issues in my body that are there from the pre-vegan days. I used to think something came to my awareness when I started looking into fasting was the toxins from meat and dairy get stored in your joints. And so that's why my joints are feeling bad, because of all the pre-veganism, all the food I ate then has caused me damage. I need to fast it out my system, not knowing it was all the sugar I was consuming.
There definitely are some, we've got that train sort of serenading us in the background here. There are some of these subtle themes that get pushed around vegan circles. You know, you're detoxing when you feel bad, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that was it. So I continued to search within veganism, came to raw veganism, like Elise, and delved into that community. And it seemed to make sense. Like, God didn't make the world with fire, he provides food as it should be eaten, raw kind of thing. And so that made a lot of sense to me at the time. Adam and Eve, Garden of Eden, this kind of stuff. And it just made sense. But then it also, and my mind blocked my actual body's feeling of how I was doing and got sort of trapped in that realm of thinking.
It's challenging how when we believe something fervently as humans, we can talk ourselves into it for a long time, especially when there's an emotional connection or some sort of something, if it feels like there's something bigger than us that we're participating in.
Yes.
It's very hard to see it objectively.
Yeah, it was righteous. Certainly could be, and it became more righteous. And you see it in the vegans now, and it was in me certainly, was like, I mean, it still has some understanding of not, you know, to be arrogant with it, but it was like, humans need to change. This is the shift. This is the real movement. None of this, you know, Dalai Lama is not even vegan and all this kind of stuff. It's like, this is the real movement that saves the earth. And what happened was, I think, zoomed out again, you know? So we zoomed out to that. Actually, like you said, you support people making a conscious choice. And that's what we did. And then we get stuck in that choice. And for me, I was on the cover of vegan magazines and stuff. I was a real, like, advocate.
You were a
like,
vegan superstar.
I was a bit of a poster boy in that scene. And the thing is they're so welcoming, because I guess there's not that many athletes. So when you do become one, they're like, oh, this guy. And people would say, but you achieved your things from meat, or you grew up on meat. So that's, and I would always have the honest thought in my head, like, there's some truth to that, you know, maybe that is it, but I do feel better now. But I was thinking, how would I have done if I would have never eaten that stuff? I always thought I would be healthier now. You know, we blame this stuff on our old ways, and truth now, I wish I'd never. No regrets, right? But it's a tough coming out of veganism. 6 years of veganism has been a tough journey.
You were vegan for 6 years.
6 years.
So what sports did you play?
I mean, I played football growing up, soccer, like any British boy. And then I did breakdancing and then free running, which takes a lot of impact on the joints. You need to be eating the right foods to do that long term. And I did Ninja Warrior. I competed in Ninja Warrior. I was in American Ninja Warrior. I won the UK show twice. And those were my main sports. Just like, I just love the human body and movement and expressions of that.
So you were doing the free running, which is like parkour type stuff, if people are familiar with that. Yeah. And then you won Ninja Warrior twice in UK, the UK.
Yeah.
And then you competed in the American version.
I competed in the American one before the English one. And then they made an English show and I thought, let's not travel anymore to fall in water after a minute, you know.
Right. So you were pretty well known, and you were successful in the free running community. You had
I won world championships in free running. Mm-hmm. But then when I became vegan, it was a weird one, because I sort of veganism became more important to me than my passion. But at the same time, my body was slowly declining. So it was like a swap that just the universe gave me. It was like, oh, I don't need to do the free running. I'll just focus on this. But in my heart, my spirit, my child just always wants to flip and jump, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all are we're all little monkeys. Yeah, it's fun to do those type of movements for sure.
So you need the right nutrition from young to do that.
Yeah. So how much of your success in free running and parkour was before you went vegan?
All of my parkour success was before I was vegan. Mm-hmm. Ninja Warrior, I was successful as a vegan. And mm-hmm. that was one of my stepping on the course, all the cameras and crowd and TV and stuff was like, I'm representing veganism. This powerful tool, like the belief is, you know, and it worked. It got me somewhere and I still achieved. But I think that was the best I ever did was as raw vegan. Mm-hmm. And that was like, yeah, it was just testimony to like, I was suffering, I think, physically, but I was able to train intelligently enough that I could just get through to the course and complete it.
How many years into your vegan journey was that?
That was like six, at the end of it, five and a half years. Yeah, so yeah.
5.5 years. Yeah. Then, wow.
Which people are like, that's proof that you were fine. And I'm like, that's proof of how fucking much I had to apply my mind to get through. Like,
right.
That was testimony to my intelligent training, to train without getting injured with how my body was feeling. All I could do was hang all day. And quite a bit of marijuana and foam rolling, like fascia, like myofascia release, right. A lot of myofascia release.
Were you raw vegan at that time?
I was raw at the time I did the best, yeah. I think this is a big thing, and I mentioned it earlier. One of the big things that people don't understand with veganism that I've heard that I really think rings true for me is your fascia becomes dehydrated. And for people that know, the fascia is sort of the coating around the muscle that links all the muscles together, like the sausage tube, and the muscles are the sausages. And that's, it's such a slow decline that you don't really notice. But when I started to tune in and using plant medicines to really tap into something's not right, and it helps you to identify what's, and dehydration in my joints and in my fascia around my muscles, that's the hardest thing to come out of coming out of veganism, is to get the fascia not glued up again, you know?
I imagine. I mean, you look at the NFL right now, Cam Newton is out for the rest of the season with an unhealing foot injury. Yep. There's examples within the vegan physician community of Joel Kahn, who has this non-healing foot injury. Yeah. I think that for tendons and ligaments, we see this very distinctly on a plant-based diet, that whether it's an inadequate supply of glycine or inadequate supply of cofactors to make collagen, there's something going on there and the body tends to break down. These vegan athletes get injured.
I got injured. Yeah. I had injuries that just weren't recovering. And the further away it was the further away from my heart or my center. It was like I felt it in my feet first and my ankles, and then slowly works its way up.
Now you were in the Game Changers, weren't you?
I filmed for Game Changers. Yeah.
So you were in this movie.
Yeah.
And what did they film you doing and what was that like?
So we filmed in 2015 and there was free running around London, and it was a really cool shoot. We shot for a few days, did an interview. And I was stoked to be a part of it, man. I was excited. And then 6 months later, we're still filming. Now we've got Arnold Schwarzenegger involved. Now we've got this person involved. And it just kept growing and growing. And it was like bouncing from thing to thing. And 3 years still hadn't come out. And eventually I'd stop being vegan. I was like, I better let these guys know. There's a few things I filmed with Jamie Oliver. I don't know if you know him, the British chef.
Yeah.
He did a vegan, completely vegan episode. And I filmed with him as the vegan athlete. And that, I was like, you might want to take me out of that. Yeah.
So what did the producers of Game Changers say when you were like, I'm not a vegan anymore, you guys got to take me out?
Man, they're awesome guys, man. They're like anyone. You stated it earlier. They really care. They really believe in what they're doing. Then I don't think there's an agenda. People point to James Cameron and say he's got ties with the pea protein and all this stuff. And maybe, but I don't think they're motivated by money. I think they genuinely believe in what they're doing. And they Skyped with me and said, look, do you want to speak to a vegan nutritionist and we can help you? I'm like, I'm good. Like, I knew as I came out of veganism, like, I knew the lesson from God or from higher self or whatever. I knew my journey of this vegan character was done. I thought that was a chapter of my life had to go through. A spiritual ego appeared and grew, and you know, this righteous guy. And it's like, I just laughed. It was the cosmic joke, you know. It was like, I'm sure you felt the same, right? Like, go on.
Yeah, I felt exactly the same. Like, I had a lot of people reaching out to me saying like, what are you doing? Like, at the, I don't know, at the level that you're at with the amount of people that know you, you could have tapped into all the vegan doctors. Like you could have all the resources, the supplements sponsored, everything at your fingertips. And at that point, I already knew, like I already knew that this is no longer my path. And I just, yeah, the same way Tim described it, like then once again, saw the bird's eye view from an even different perspective.
Yeah.
And I guess it's so interesting to think, even with all the vegan supplements and all the vegan doctors, there probably would have been nothing to help.
No, nothing. You can't. Like for me, like once I'd started to look into the realm, I had friends all over the world that had slowly stopped being vegan, like entering keto and telling me the same results, and started researching that, looking at our ancestry, looking at the history, and just being able to look at it without biased eyes. When your health goes, that was really the crux. Like when you're sensitive to your health, and this is the problem I think with most vegans, is they're not sensitive to their health, and they're not checking, and they're not going to yoga regularly or running regularly. You need a practice where you know how your body is feeling and whether it's on the way up or down, and not to just, everyone wanted to blame my ailments on older age and all my free running years, and they're just, you just, it's like, I'm not going to accept that. I'm going to keep searching, and I believe in my ability to be healthier and thrive again. And it was until I had to let go of the last thing I would let go of, and that was my beliefs and diet.
So for you, was it mostly joint stuff, you said? That
I mean, I had digestive stuff as well. I had it all, man, like that many years in and training the way I was. But the joint, to not have the, to be 30 years old and to not be able to go to the gym or be able to run or to be able to train regularly without suffering or having injuries, muscles, tears that wouldn't heal for months, that's so depressive, man. Like I understand at some point in life I'm going to have to accept letting go of the body, right? We all are. But at 30, come on, like let me just have another 20 years or something. Like, so that was for me a sign that something's not right, because everything you're reading online is telling you this is the most optimum diet to thrive. They talk about thriving, you know, but I'm not thriving. Like, we're not thriving. So there's one thing you can be told and read, and I think this is in a lot of culture, is the image that we're told that we're like evolving, we're evolving and we can go to space and all this stuff, when really they're slowly pulling the wool over our eyes and we're going the wrong way with the standard American diet being so toxic and inflammatory in the body and people having so much mental health issues. And who's really talking about diet as a factor other than these movements that are saying inflammation of the brain is causing your depression, and if you change your diet, that might go away. But in the mainstream, that's not as conversation as it is nutrition.
No, the nutritional conversation is not happening enough in the mainstream, especially within mainstream medicine. And I talked about this on a recent podcast I did, that if Western medicine woke up to the fact that food was the biggest lever with health and disease, then the system would change radically, because there would be research into that, and there would actually be a standardized effort to say, if food is connected with disease, then we need to figure out which foods are going to enable health and which foods are taking away from health. But right now, when you go to see a gastroenterologist or a rheumatologist or an endocrinologist, they will deny it to your face that any disease, whether it's Hashimoto's thyroiditis or ulcerative colitis or rheumatoid arthritis or lupus, whatever, eczema, is connected with food. They will say, no, it's not, in the crazy majority of times. And that's a great disservice to a lot of people.
Yeah. It's messed up. And we're all sugar addicts, and there's dealers on every corner. It's like,
that's true.
And no one cares. No one's going to tell you to stop. Like, it's on you to have to face that and decide.
Yeah. And there's mainstream messaging saying that it's fine.
Exactly.
You know, yeah, and that you should eat these foods. So you had an amazing experience with salmon too, right? You ate salmon,
mm-hmm,
and then had this, I mean, there's a famous YouTube video of you, right?
Yeah. I had salmon and I had a wet dream that night. What did we learn it was called? I asked the scientific name for emission, a nocturnal emission.
Yeah, yeah. We can censor that part for, well, we'll leave it in. No. But that's the non-PG-313 part of this podcast. Yeah. But I mean, this is an indication of sexual function, right?
Yeah,
and so you ate salmon and you had, you know, you had an ejaculation while you were sleeping. It's like your body just like woke up.
Yeah.
The first time you had it.
The very first night I had salmon animal products in for years, I had a wet dream. And I was like, these are the signs that get overlooked. People want some like blood data and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, you can do that. But for me, I'm like, my body's talking to me all the time, right? That was one of the major ones for me. It was like, and things like, I felt warmer. Like I felt so cold in the winters. And it was like, I felt warmer within months, like warmer blooded, like, or within days, sorry.
I think what's interesting too is like, because I had a experience with sex drive with salmon as well. And it seemed like there were a lot of videos made about both Tim and I that were kind of like mocking our situations. And they were like, oh, what do you mean? Like you like got horny from salmon. Like that's so weird. What, like just having an issue with our genuine stories and the immaturity and, or the just not understanding like how serious it actually was. And I don't know, it was just interesting, like how for us, it was like the most obvious sign that something was turning back on, something was working properly. And like Tim said, feeling more warm, like I felt more whole and like I was sinking into like a human form again. Like, I don't know what the heck I was feeling before, but I was not as like present and grounded.
What was the backlash like for you, Elise, when you talked about when you came out and you had the video on YouTube saying I ate salmon, I ate animal foods and my brain fog?
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty intense.
Yeah. I mean, there were over 100 videos that were made about me and most of them were not positive. Most of them were, you know, that I'm a liar, that I'm a fake, that I was never really vegan, that like maybe I just a problem with my timeline of like me needing to process on my own before sharing publicly with a lot of individuals. So the backlash was intense. But I think overall, like looking back now, looking at the situation, I think a lot of people were pleased with the way that I handled it. And like the data can't lie. When I started receiving like so many messages from people saying, you are so different, you're so healthy now, like you're speaking more clearly, like I love this version of you. And so that was so helpful to receive, kind of like knowing like not only am I experiencing way better health, but also knowing that other people are noticing those changes too. And yeah, so it was harsh in the beginning, but afterwards it was worth it.
It was really brave. I mean, you had to go through a lot to do that. I can't imagine what it would be like. Social media is a strange thing, right?
It is.
I'm on social media. We're all on social media. We're putting ourselves out there and we're like on the stockade and people can just pillory, you know, people can just throw tomatoes at you as much as they want. They're in the peanut gallery, but we're all on a little stage and you were on a really big stage and did something really brave. And then you got 100 tomatoes hurled at you. Why do you think there's such a back? I mean, let's just really like cut the BS here. Like, what is up with the vegan community? Like, why is there such a backlash here? Like, I don't understand why. And I'm not
starving.
I think
there's a factor. I genuinely think I felt it too. Like, your body is shutting down and you're in survival mode. And so that this is what happens all the time when we get depressed or something. We blame it on a scenario that's when really it's the body that's suffering and we need to get that right. And we can deal with any scenario when we're in good health, but when the body's getting deprived, we'll find any scenario and that's the fault for this, that's the fault for that. And it's just start projecting onto things.
It seems like the vegan community, and again, I don't want to single them out because I want to be inclusive and I want to like welcome, you know, people within that community who are making intentional choice. I don't mean to be negative, but it just seems like that community is very, very derogatory toward anyone that ever leaves and anyone that ever questions it. And that's
animal suffering, I think.
I think what also I'll speak to a little and then pass to Tim is that there's just so much passion and it's like a righteous like fire that is about like the inequality and the relationship between humans and animals and how it's just so wrong. And it's like this action of I'm putting my foot down, I stand for this so much that for someone to, it's interesting too, because a lot of individuals who are vegan will treat someone who was vegan and then transitions back to eating animal foods so much worse than an individual who is eating animal foods all along. And it's this feeling of like, well, you knew, how could you turn your back on this movement and like everything that needs to happen? And I think with anything, like it's just coming from a place of passion, but yeah, it's a hard one to speak on.
Can I just ask you one more question, Elise? What do you think about this? Do you think that the main ethos within the vegan movement now is that the treatment of animals is bad? Maybe is it less about the nutritional stuff now and more about sort of the inequality between humans and animals?
I think that the driving factor from veganism is what gives them the most passion is animals dying. And it's the lack of ability to accept for all our choices, things die. and even for our vegan choices, I feel more ethical now and less animals suffer when I go to my local farm shop and I buy local dairy rather than avocados and coconut oil, and I buy a ribeye steak rather than wheat and gluten and soy and all this stuff, which is killing how many insects and rodents and bugs and
disrupting
and
ecosystems.
There's so much. There's a cow walking around a field less than a mile from my house, and that could last me 3 months. And that is so much less impact on the planet. One animal's, and I can pray for that cow and give thanks for that cow. I know which animal has gone into that, rather than not knowing and just turning a blind eye and going, yeah, well, that's just a byproduct. It's like, you're still choosing to support that.
I think that people...
It's immature. It's a lack of ability to accept the reality.
And I think it's a lack of perspective. And I see... And again, I'm not trying to be negative toward vegans. It's an observation. I see a lot of them say animal lover now. And the inference is like, if you eat meat, you're not an animal lover, or you don't care about life. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a really nuanced thing that people get wrong a lot. Like, there's nothing about eating animals that says you don't like animals.
What's interesting too is this lens that a lot of vegans put on, which is that... this perspective that consuming meat, that is factory farming. And there's this like missing link where like all of a sudden when you become vegan, you watch these documentaries and you see what's happening in factory farms, and you paint this picture of eating meat as a whole being exactly like that. And for me, that stuck with me. And I just perceived meat as exactly what's happening there, pumped with hormones. And I totally forgot what consuming meat from like Tim was saying, from a local farm, from a local area, that was even possible, and that maybe that could be healthy in some ways, because I was so like covered with that other lens.
I've seen this on vegan sites. They do use this imagery a lot, and it's very evocative. You know, it really sucks seeing anyone, whether it's a human treated badly in a wartime situation, or, you know, we don't want to see kids abused. We don't want to see, you know, we don't want to hear about people being raped or murdered. We don't want to hear about animals being mistreated. But I do think it's a bit misleading for the vegan community to represent all animal agriculture as that, or to equate people who eat animals as condoning that or wanting that, you know? Mm-hmm. And what's never talked about, as Tim is suggesting, within these communities, is the massive ecosystem disruption and the great loss of life, and that happens from monocrop agriculture and plant-based agriculture. And this is never talked about. And I think that there are great farms like White Oak Pastures and this regenerative agriculture movement. There's a lot of ways to consume animals that allow them to lead lives that are whole lot less suffering than a factory farmed animal. Now, there's a lot of people on this planet, and I think that that's the way we should have done all agriculture. We should have done all farming of animals in a regenerative way, in a compassionate way, but unfortunately it's not all there. And so we're kind of stuck in this bugaboo. We don't have a great option, but there are more of these farms, and there are many options which do not create that. And like what you said, Tim, and I've said this before, I think it's hard for modernized humans, because we're not out hunting our food or gathering our food. We don't have any connection with the natural world anymore. It's kind of been taken from us. And so it's a very foreign concept to realize that no matter what we do on this earth, we impact the earth. We're going to, you know, in order for something to live, something else must die. That is just the way of life.
Unless you fast and meditate in a cave.
Unless you fast and meditate in a cave and you figure out how to make energy from the sun, which has never been, you know.
Not in the modern time. No.
Nobody's figured out how to do it that I'm aware of. I mean, maybe throughout history, someone did it, but
it's hidden. Yeah.
But we can't do it. And even plant-based farming is going to disrupt lives and disrupt ecosystems, perhaps in many ways in a greater way than well-done animal agriculture.
I mean, where I live in England, there's frozen ground in the winter, right? Like, there's no way any of our ancestors would have survived winter without animal foods. Not one generation has gone 1 month probably without on a vegan diet in the UK. I help my friends, they've got allotments there, and I help them with gardening, and we see how much worms and slugs and everything are involved, and you have to, it's a battle against these insects just for like local home at home little bit of vegetables, just for like a fifth of your plate to be filled up with some peas and beans and stuff. And it's like, if everyone had a relation and had to grow their own food, they would soon realize animals are being destroyed either way, and actually it's far more efficient to get some of our nutrition from animal products because it's just efficient, and it, you know, they poop on the ground and it replenishes the soil, the topsoil gets its nutrition back. It's an absolute necessity for us to live in harmony with animals and plants as well. And if you take the animals out of that and see them as something different, it's just downhill for health and humanity.
The ecosystem's collapsed.
Yeah.
And that's the short-sighted perspective of a plant-based.
But it's at one point it's a larger sighted, but then we just get, people get trapped in it. And it's like, you have to, like you say, have perspective and see again. Like if someone in the vegan community said, hey, I wanted to speak out and say, we might need to concede honey because we need bees. So we might need some bee farms just so we can support bees for honey. But even that would have been a terrifying thing to speak on within veganism. And so someone needs to speak on the crops, but you can't do it from within veganism. You just be shut down, but it's the reality.
Oh my gosh. I totally forgot about, I had a honey situation as well, like living in Hawaii and just learning the way that bees are kept there versus mainland and all of that, like GMO honey and that process. And I remember going through that experience and I started to consume honey like, I don't even know, maybe like a year before I stopped being vegan. And just this heavy feeling of like, I can't talk about that because, you know, yeah, just this heavy feeling. And
you wanted to.
I wanted to, but there's this, yeah. And then also this, this lens of, what was I going to say? Oh yeah. Not being open to receiving like any of the information that you were just sharing about agriculture, farming, the environment, like just completely like shutters down. I don't need to know about that. Like it's not real, like just not being open to it. And I think also what Tim shared about like getting to a point where you're X amount of years into veganism and all of these different things are not working for you anymore. Like you're starting to become deficient. And there is a level of that adding to the already close-knit community of like, now you're not even thinking like, it's such a tough one. Like you're not even thinking, I don't want to know any information, but like, you can't even comprehend it. Even if someone was to share it with you. Like, it's rough.
If when the mind becomes closed, and I think that it's like you said, I think for a lot of people in the plant-based community, it's coming from a good place.
Yes.
But it's dangerous because it's getting too closed off. It's almost too much fervor. And I try really hard not to get that dogmatic within the carnivore community too. And hopefully, you know, we're a little more open-minded. And people often juxtapose carnivore and vegan and say they're two ends of the same spectrum. And I think, I don't know about that. You know, I think that carnivore and veganism or plant-based diets are similar in the fact that they both exclude a large portion of the foods that we eat as humans. But
well, I think the difference like that I recognize in you from spending time with you and like tuning into the content that you share is your openness and you're wanting to research and you're wanting to learn what's working. And there, the difference is openness versus closeness.
It's not clouded by ethics or belief in ethics.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's this phrase now, the virtue signaling. And I do think that a lot of the ideology within plant-based communities has become overly clouded and they're just not open to the other options. But yeah. So what are you eating these days, Elise?
I love my bacon. I'm really just eating meat, fish, eggs. Yeah. I mean, I just dove into like hardcore carnivore. I'm going to do a little YouTube video documenting my journey for 30 days. But before that, I was eating meat, fish, eggs with some dark chocolate and blueberries. But really, like, probably if I had to put a number on it, like 90% animal foods for almost a year now, like 8 months or so. And yeah, the more I stray off of that, the more I notice mental clarity starts to take a plunge and digestion as well. So those are just my two main things. And oh yeah, something I was going to refer to earlier is it seemed like Tim and I both had multiple symptoms or things that were not going well for us. And what we both had one thing that was just like the thing that pushed us over the edge. For Tim, it was athletic ability. For me, it was my mental clarity, because they're both related to like the things that bring us joy. And it's interesting how those are still our main focuses that we speak about, and the other ones are of lesser importance. And what I noticed a lot with other vegans is just not prioritizing the things that weren't really working, like having off digestion, maybe having low sex drive, maybe feeling a little foggy, but not taking it seriously.
kind of ignoring it.
I went on
it.
A tangent there.
No, it's good. They were kind of ignoring it.
Yeah.
They were
being okay with it. It's
blinders.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Being okay with feeling okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we talked about this a little bit, but what have you noticed over the last year of incorporating mostly animal foods into your diet? You said that you're pretty much carnivore this month. I know you've gone mm-hmm. through phases of total carnivory, sometimes having some plants.
Yeah.
What have you noticed over the last year as you've brought these foods back in?
Yeah. Okay. So mental clarity is the main thing. Stable energy is amazing. Having a sex drive is great. Having good digestion is also helpful. I've noticed more power in the gym and being able to maintain and put on muscle without as much exercise as I did when I was vegan. I was like crushing it in the gym and was like, oh my gosh, maybe if I do another scoop of protein powder, like I'll be able to actually put on and like grow muscle. But it was a struggle for me. And now I just feel like my physique has changed with less exercise, more so just focusing on the animal foods. I also really like enjoy all of my meals a lot. Like it's so fun to eat the animal foods and I don't know. I feel like I had fun with the aesthetic of plant foods, but as far as the taste of it and the enjoyment of it and the feeling of I'm so freaking nourished after, like that just wasn't there. And yeah, I love the process of eating now because I actually feel so nourished. And one other thing is that I used to feel very like foggy after I would eat a meal of plant food. I'd be like, oh no, like I'm not going to eat until halfway through the day or later than that because I have work to do and I can't feel foggy in the brain. And now like being able to eat whenever and not necessarily feel like my cognition is declining for digestion purposes or whatever is going on, like that's amazing. I could probably go on.
Can I just say for me, one of the biggest things that I noticed was satiation. So, like I actually felt full. I didn't realize how much food was so in my mind, like shouting all the time. I had to always have a snack bar or a banana or like a date snack or something always on me. And it would just be such a thought. And I would think about food so much. And after I reincorporated animal foods, just to be able to go 2 hours and go, I haven't thought about food in 2 hours, bro. You don't understand like how desperate my body was for something. And like the signs were there. It's asking for these foods this whole time. And I just wasn't giving it because I was stuck in this thing. And that was huge to come out of that and actually feel what satiation feels like. And especially the raw food, it's like you can just eat and eat and eat and you just never felt satisfied. And it's like the signs are there, but you just can't experiment enough to find out.
Yeah, within the carnivore community and especially within ketogenic communities, people often report they don't think about food anymore at all. They get so much easier. And people often say that when they go from a ketogenic diet to a carnivore diet, it's even easier and they can think about food less and they have less cravings and they can go longer between meals. Yeah, absolutely. Totally an indication.
Yeah.
Elise, I'll just ask you one more question. I know you have to run. Do you ever get bored with it? Because a lot of people will ask about a carnivore diet, like how they, because, you know, we're both in San Diego now. And when I meet new people, they'll say, how do you eat steak at every meal? And the first thing I do is correct them that I don't eat just steak at every meal, that I eat organ meats and whatever. And people are like, they don't really understand that. But you know, I mean, a lot of people do worry or have concern that about eating basically steak at every meal or animal foods at every meal. Do you get bored with it? Tell me about your experiences.
I never get bored with it.
Right? Neither.
No, like it's...
I don't think we're just deluding ourselves.
I mean, I do think that you and I, maybe Tim, but I know both you and I can lean on the more like extreme end of the spectrum living and like enjoying it.
Right.
Tim's like, me too. So there's that, but I can only speak from being in that place and like, I don't ever get bored of it. I enjoy every meal. Like I don't switch it up a ton. I don't need to. I mean, there's definitely a thing with social settings, but if you're feeling good, that can be like the guiding factor and just like listening to what's feeling good. And there's definitely ways to navigate social settings. Like these past couple of weeks for me out in restaurants, like just navigating, ordering the things that I'm eating. And it's working and I feel good. And, I don't get bored.
Don't get bored with animal foods.
No.
So did
over easy eggs and bacon every single morning. How can you complain?
You really can't get bored of that.
No.
So did I ever tell you I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail?
I don't remember. remember.
So, I mean, most of my listeners will know, I've talked about this on a few podcasts. So the Pacific Crest Trail is a continuous trail that goes from Mexico to Canada and it goes through the Sierra and basically the Western Divide. So the mountains of like Southern California, which are like the San Jacintos and then the Sierra and then up into the Cascades in Oregon and Washington. It's 2,700 miles. And I hiked it a long time ago, like 20 years ago.
So you weren't carnivore at the time.
I was not.
I want to know how to do that.
I was.
I love backpacking.
Oh, we can do it. It's totally doable.
We should all go on a backpacking trip.
Yeah. We could do it. We should do a carnivore backpacking trip. But what was so interesting, and I didn't understand this at the time, actually, when I started on the trail, I wanted to be vegetarian because it was. This was before my vegan days, but I was a hippie, right? I was out of college. I was a hippie and I thought, I want to be vegetarian. So I tried to do the trail vegetarian. I dehydrated so many apples and made spaghetti sauce, pancakes for backpacking. And I had dates. And within the first 3 days, all I wanted to do was steal the jerky from my buddy, the turkey and the beef jerky that my buddy had brought. And I was like, oh boy, I made a big mistake here. And at every rest stop throughout the whole trail, I went for a burger and I ate as much meat as I could. But the other thing that was so interesting for me as I was doing this was that I quickly got bored of plant foods. Mm. Non-processed plant foods got boring when I ate them every day. So I'd made this like what I thought was a perfect porridge, oats and ground up flax seeds and probably millet and, you know, who knows, you know, just like this perfect porridge. And within like a month, I didn't even want to see it. I could not eat it anymore. I got so bored of plant foods every day that were not processed, right? And I got bored of peanut butter. I mean, they're definitely why you laugh.
I'm like cringing over here just thinking about my time eating vegan on the trail. Like cringing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So many nuts and raisins.
I was probably 4 or 5 days in when I had getting
what
tired.
What trail was this?
The Appalachian Trail.
Okay, so you were on the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah, for 94 days vegan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you're having flashbacks now.
Yeah, I'm like, oh my God, peanut butter. I can't eat peanut butter. I can't eat any bars, like any bars, unless they're epic meat bars. I can't eat oatmeal. So many things. I was so sick of my food. That was the main reason I got off the trail.
I got sick of my food too. Yeah. I got sick of all of all my plant food within the first month and a half. And I didn't even want to eat peanut butter. And a lot of people who are omnivores will say like, oh, peanut butter, I could eat that every day. Mm-hmm. You cannot eat peanut butter every day on the trail. You get so sick of it. Yeah. But I never got sick of cheese and I never got sick of meat. Mm-hmm. And so as I went on the trail, my diet became more and more of those. Unfortunately, it also became more processed food.
Yeah,
toward the end of the trail, this is a long time ago, everybody. My audience is like cringing now hearing, this is like 20 years ago, everybody. Everybody. But like I ate Pop-Tarts and at the end of the trail, I was putting like cream cheese on pieces of bread.
Dude, I was having peanut butter and jelly bagels. I made a song about it when I was on the trail, like all delusional hiking, like eating peanut butter and jelly on bagels and just, all the processed things. Like,
and I think it's also an interesting thing to say that like, you will not get sick of processed plant foods. You can eat Pop-Tarts every day for the rest of your life. And this is the danger of processed plant foods. But if you are eating unprocessed plant foods, your body will quickly tell you like, hey, I'm so sick of these. Please give me something else.
One thing I have noticed, and I wonder if you noticed it as well, if I eat like that at home, I feel bad very quickly. If I eat like that on the trail or in nature, I feel like I can get by a lot longer. And it's like, I've done that when I've done I've not done 90 days.
Plant-based.
I was vegan, and I'd be eating snacking and processed vegan and stuff, but I'd be fine as long as I was in nature, breathing air, walking. And it's like, it helped the body to deal with it. But as soon as I carried that diet back on when I got home, within a day, you're feeling so groggy and nasty. One of the things I just wanted to touch on was, you asked about the healing, because I've done experiments with carnivore as well and ketogenic. And I don't know how much it certainly replenishes your levels, but I don't know how much it heals you and how much it just stops you causing more harm. Do you know what I mean? Because I think the healing is a really long, like if I reintroduce the foods, I quickly feel bad again to the point when I was at the end of the vegan diet. It's not like I've healed to when I can start a vegan diet 6 years again. It's like, do you know what I mean? It feels like there's damage done, and the carnivore diet doesn't heal me. It gives me the fuel to live, and it's kind of like fasting, but with the fuel to live. And it allows me the time and space to slowly do the healing. And it might take 6 years to heal from veganism. Or I don't know what the process is, but there's definitely long-term damage from veganism. That's a long uphill battle to get through. But I think some of the healing comes in when you're able to not think about food and you're out with your family or your niece and you're playing in the ocean and you're playing, running around, sweating, playing sports in the sun, and you're not thinking about anything else. Those moments in life, the energy, that's the real, when the healing takes place, not when you're eating just the correct foods. They just allow you to get through the day, kind of thing.
You know, there's this naturopathic principle that if you remove the obstacles, the body will heal itself.
First, do no harm.
Right.
Yeah.
And I like that. You know, I train traditionally as an allopath, which is in the West, the word we use for people that go to medical school and get an MD as opposed to like a naturopathic doctorate degree. But I've always identified more with the naturopathic principle of
get out of the way, the body heals.
Get it out of the way, the body's going to
heal. So I did a fast. I did a 35-day water fast.
You did a 35-day water fast?
At home, yeah. With that exact principle in mind, and came out of it back to veganism. And my issues all came back. And that's when I was like, it's the diet. Like, that was it. But that was exactly my plan, was like, I could fast all of my ailments out from pre-veganism, come back to veganism and be fine. And there was healing that took place, although all the vegans blamed that for my failure. But that was actually, it did do healing. But it was quick that all the issues came back very quickly.
Immediately when you started reintroducing the plant foods.
Within a week,
you had the reactions triggered.
They came back. So it was like getting out of the way. It didn't quite heal, but it's like there's a lot of consciousness and psychology and happiness involved in healing that's underrated, and diet alone isn't the sole thing.
No, there's much more than diet. Yeah. It's a big lever, and I think it's foundational.
It's just doing no harm. It's getting out the way. So
getting it out of the way.
Carnivore diet allows that massively.
Giving your body the nutrients it needs.
You're not causing inflammation.
Right.
Stuff. Yeah.
Right. And then your body kind of gradually recovers. Yeah.
I'm gonna pop out, but I want to leave everyone with one last little snippet.
Lay it on us.
Which is along the lines of, if you have yet to dive in and make a change to mostly animal foods, just simply introducing animal foods if you've been vegan, vegetarian, or transitioning to full carnivore, like if there is a knowing of I'm not functioning as well as I know that I can, then literally listen to that. Like, it is not worth it to go one more day not acting in alignment with that and not taking action. And any belief system can be shattered and recovered. Like, everything's going to be okay, but you need to take the step that you know intuitively that you may have been denying, and it's so worth it.
I think that's great. I think people need to know that it's okay to do experiments when they're trying to understand their health and improve their health.
And also, I think that so many of us want to, and it's just a matter of, I don't want to be the only one. And it's like, we're all simultaneously, I don't want to be the only one to break out and try this new thing, or to like take the step in a direction that maybe my friends and family are not doing it. But like, we're all simultaneously feeling that. So to do so is like not only doing good for yourself, but it's also giving other people permission to do the same.
Absolutely. I love it. Why don't you tell people where they can find your stuff, Elise?
Elise Parker on YouTube and Instagram, and EliseParker.com.
And it's A-L-Y-S-E.
Yes.
Parker is spelled like Parker.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on, Elise. Tim and I will talk a little more shop, and
cool,
we'll keep rolling. So Tim, what are you eating these days?
So I just did a 2-week carnivore stint. Again, I did it earlier in the year for a month. Definitely learning just how to incorporate animal product and have whole meals of just animal products is a game changer, just to go a meal without.
It's a real game changer.
Yeah, it is the real game changer. So I'm experimenting with a lot of that, a lot of local ribeye steaks, lots of eggs. When I have dairy, but when I eat it, I do definitely notice it causes some inflammation and makes the digestion makes me a bit more constipated, I think I find from dairy.
Yeah, dairy's usually constipating for people.
Yeah, I can get away with a bit, but too much, I notice it. So sometimes I notice if I go full carnivore, the dairy starts to sneak in more as like the dessert, the cream, you know how it is, a clot of cream or whatever comes in. And so if I just eat like carnivore meals, but then allow myself like a keto snack bar or something like that, just to not be fighting those battles, or because it's like you can go too far and then snap back.
Right.
So I find that's like my middle ground.
How did you feel for the 2 weeks you did a carnivore diet?
I felt good. The one issue, when I eat too many steaks, I get my gums become sore. Huh. And I don't know if that's damaged still from veganism. And so I had more mints, and I'd notice when I have mints, too much mints and eggs and stuff, it wouldn't feel quite as, like the steak would go down so smooth. The mints would like make me feel a bit more puffy and like
Like ground beef.
Yeah, like ground beef and lamb mince and stuff.
Huh,
yeah,
I wonder if it's like a histamine issue or something.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah,
with the ground beef, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's all fresh from the butchers. They do it in front of me. But right. But it's maybe something in it that's like... But the steaks feel great and go down smooth.
I've heard people talk about feeling different. And I think I feel the same way. Like, I don't enjoy ground beef as much anymore.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
This gets into conversations that I've had with people like James DiNicolantonio. We don't really have access as humans to fresh meat anymore.
Yeah.
And a lot of the meat that we're eating has been hung. It's not, it's aged.
And they all age.
I mean, it's better than nothing, you know, but I think that the more that we process the meat, whether it's grinding and aging and hanging, and it's not as good for us. And so the ideal is always eat the freshest meat you can.
Maybe. In Ayurveda as well, there's like less than 30 minute old beef is like the most healing thing.
That's
that you can
probably
have.
The answer.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But how are you ever going to eat unless you're the farmer yourself?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Unless you're the farmer or, I mean,
farmer's
this is
best friend.
I think this is actually a really fascinating nuance to the carnivore or ketogenic or paleo conversation is, wow. I don't know how, my camera's dying. Hold on. All right. Yeah. We had a little camera malfunction. We'll wrap it up here. But what I was saying is just that, yeah, there it goes again. Mm-hmm. Camera's dying. Okay. Just the idea that we don't really have fresh meat anymore. And I don't know what we're going to do for this as humans. And I think that that's going to affect us. But evolutionarily, we certainly would have always had access or
very
frequently
fresh meat, yeah.
Very fresh meat.
That's one of my biggest grievances with the vegan movement is they're creating enemies of farmers, and that our ancestors' biggest allies was the farmer. It would have been the close relationships. Everyone in the neighborhood would have known the farmer and they would have been great friends. And now we turn enemies with our local neighbors, the farmers, while we're supporting Nestle because they're making vegan ice cream or something, you know. And it's completely blind and backwards, and that really upsets me.
It is, and we need to just get back to I don't know, spending more time in the natural world, meeting the farmers, getting back to these types of farms.
Yeah.
It sounds like you live in a place that's really pretty close to being connected with these types of farming.
I'm in the countryside in England, and we've got much more ethical like practices in terms of killing animals. I think in America it's a lot harder, and I do support a human making whatever's the best choice for their health, if whatever they can afford. But for me, in the UK, I think we've got better practices in terms of slaughter. And so I've got several farm shops within 10 minutes of my house I can drive to and get. I can see the chickens running around and I can see the cows in the fields. And I had messages from Kip Anderson messaged me when I stopped being vegan. And he was like, when you're supporting this, you're supporting these, you know, factory farms. And talked about, I think, cougars or something getting killed. I don't know what it went into some thing. And it's like, dude, I live in England. I see cows down the road. And like, I feel like that's a sign for me from God was like, just eat this. Stop him buying your watermelons and suffering. You know, it's like right here.
It's right in front of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's there the whole time.
Yeah. It's so interesting. I think that we as humans are at this point in our evolution where we've taken ourselves out of what we've always done.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're paying the price. And
it's a spiritual quest, right? You got to get off track to lose yourself to find yourself. It's
yeah.
Like,
yeah. I think we've got to get back to it as much as we can and return to that lifestyle, that ancestral lifestyle is.
Yeah,
as much as we possibly can.
But our parents and grandparents have been poisoned, you know, and they've been brainwashed, and it's like they've come through the generations when all the processed stuff been invented. Then they've only got the newspaper and the radio, and then the TV comes in. So it's very easy to manipulate their beliefs and what's they've got the beliefs of like the dinner and microwave meal in front of the TV and all this stuff that we're having to undo, man. And like I say, there's crack dealers on every corner with the sugar, and it's no one's really bothered to tell you to like stop doing that. You know, you have to do it yourself.
Yeah,
it's tough.
It is tough. And I did this pretty cool podcast with Allie Miller, and I've recorded so many podcasts recently. I never know if this podcast is going to be out when that one has come out.
Okay.
But in that podcast, we talked about the reliance of humans on sweet flavors and how handicapping that can be. And that when people go carnivore, they often need to just not have any sweet in their diet and have only savory.
Yeah.
And once you get rid of sweet flavor in your diet, it helps with satiety and so many of these other things. But until people continue to have some sweet flavor in their diet, it can trigger satiety affecting hormones.
For sure. It's that commitment on your own when everyone around you thinks you're nuts for doing it. So it's really like fair play for everyone. We need... If the carnivore movement was the size of the vegan movement, it would be a lot easier to maintain around people and be more understood by people. But
I hope it will be, you know, before we jump on the podcast, we were talking a little bit about how big the carnivore movement's going to get, and we'll see. I think that, I think it's going to get pretty big.
It seems to work more effectively than veganism, but as you said, it's not got the same virtue signaling. It's not as sexy visually, is it?
It's not sexy visually, and there's a lot of political agenda around taking it down. And there's a lot of misinformation out there. And that's one of my struggles right now is understanding how to correct the misinformation without, you know, hurling insults.
Well, you and me both on that, because when I stopped being vegan and came out publicly, I got that the vegans blamed it on me, right? But it was even people in between that had never been vegan. They believed that it was still all my fault. Their mainstream belief is still that I just did it wrong. Do you know what I mean? The mainstream belief is that veganism can be healthy if you do it right. And that I really don't believe that. And so now I'm labeled in that boat from all the mainstream people that have never been vegan still just think, oh, you just didn't do it right kind of thing. And it's like, no, it's actually not healthy, guys. I'm trying to warn you. Like,
and I think that people will eventually wake up to this, you know?
Yeah. It was just ahead of the game with it. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And I just, you know, my goal, my mission is just to offer another option. Mm. If people are thriving, whatever they're doing, then who are any of us to tell them to change? But when people are struggling, it's like, hey, let's just throw them a life ring, you know, let's throw them a life preserve and be like, hey, here's something that works. You know, here's the carnivore diet. So I'm on the edge of the Titanic or the edge of a ship. Just throwing life preservers out to people like, hey, you know, you don't have to pick it up if you don't want to,
you're
chilling in the water and you're having a good time swimming in the ocean, do it. But there it is for you if you want.
Yeah. And got to do it. Hopefully, people pick it up.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, my brother.
Thanks, Paul, man. It's great to meet you, man. I've followed your stuff since I came out of veganism. I was on you and Sean Baker and you just dropping knowledge, man. It really helped.
I'm trying. Yeah. Where can people find more about your stuff these days, Tim?
Mainly Instagram is at Human Timothy. And then on YouTube, if you just search Tim Sheaf, spelled Sheieff, I make YouTube content regularly now. And it's mostly me going out into nature and exploring that. I think nature's a massive part of this journey is getting our nutrition right with our ancestors, spending time in nature just like they did in there. Yeah, things like pilgrimages, man. Like you did the PCT. I think stuff like that. Wherever you're at in the world, there's walks. Your great grandfathers did long walks for like multiple weeks, and so there's always one around. Wherever you are in the world, can do them. So I'm into that kind of stuff.
I love it. So we didn't get to ask Elise, but what is the most radical thing that you've done in the last month?
In the last month,
or the last, you know, recently? What is the most radical thing you've done recently?
Recently, I go out into swim naked in lakes and rivers all the time. I guess that would be
that's pretty radical.
Yeah.
Is this in the English countryside?
In the English countryside, yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, sometimes it's a little risk, but no one can be that offended, you know. But I think nudity is a part of accepting our own naked self is a part of healing as well.
Is it cold water?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like
cold water immersion
naked, pretty radical.
Yeah.
Pretty radical.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Thank you so much.
Thanks, bro.
All right, you guys. Thank you for tuning into that episode. I've really enjoyed hanging out with Tim and Elise, such good people. I wish I'd have been able to hang out with Tim longer and learn more parkour from him. He is an amazing individual. You can find him on Instagram at Human Timothy. Elise Parker is at Elise Parker with two R's in the end. So AlyseParkerr on Instagram. And they are both good people. You know, it's really crazy to me how much backlash they've gotten from the plant-based community for just saying that they felt better when they eat meat. I hope this never happens in the carnivore community, and I really do not like the way that the vegan communities and the carnivore communities often get compared. I don't think it's a fair comparison. I think that within the carnivore community, of course, I'm going to say this, obviously I'm biased and think you are all awesome, even if you're not carnivores, but within the carnivore community, I really feel like we're open-minded, and I'm trying not to be dogmatic. I talk about being carnivore-ish. I talk about just the spectrum of plant toxicity and the notion that animal foods are nutritious. We should prioritize them and realize that there are toxins in plant foods. And that's it. You know, if you want to be carnivore, be carnivore. I think it's amazing. I don't think we need any plants, but I'm not going to look down on anybody for eating plants. But it just doesn't seem like that's always true in the plant-based communities. And I can tell you guys, though I always try and respond with love and appreciation, I get vegan hate mail, and people are just completely ridiculous in the way that they talk to me. They're not trying to talk about science. They're not trying to talk about anything except to really just vilify me or talk down to me. It's really an unfortunate thing, the way that those communities have become so I don't know what word to use here. Just so, I don't know, so base. It's a shame. I just want to share with them appreciation that they're intentional and hope they're all healthy and doing well. So just got back from White Oak Pastures. It was amazing. We're going to do it next year. Was down in Pensacola with the publisher in Florida, working on stuff. We're doing great. And it's coming out next year, you guys. Pre-order the book, thecarnivorecodebook.com. And you can go to Indigo through there to pre-order. And as always, please review the podcast on iTunes. Let me know what you think. It's doing radically. Of course, it's doing radically, right? That's my favorite word. And guess what? I've got a t-shirt coming out. I'm trying to get it out in the next week or so prior to Christmas. So stay excited for that. It's going to say stay radical on the front and have some other stuff on the back. I got a little slogan on the back that I will surprise you guys with once the t-shirt is released. So anyway, that is what's going on with me. Hope you guys are all gearing up for the holidays and doing awesome. Blessings and appreciation to you all. Please always reach out to me, drpaul@carnivoremd.com, if you have comments, concerns, or questions. And I will see you next week. Stay radical.